Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to New Eridu. Today is Saturday, February 26, 2011, and this is your host, the voice of New Eridu. Thousands of years ago in human history, the city of Eridu was built in what is now southern Iraq. It was built by a civilization known as the Anunnaki, whose advanced technologies and civilization conceived, gave birth to, and nurtured humankind under the leadership of the Anunnaki commander of Earth, known as Enki, or Ea. Had Enki prevailed in Anunnaki politics, and had his plan for his human children been fulfilled, humankind might already have taken its place among the civilized races. The seed that Enki planted, deep within human DNA, has awakened. The sovereign, God-conscious human spirit, that miraculous gift of Source, has begun to assert its sovereign right to stand as equals among the peoples of conscience. Now begins the new paradigm, one based on truth and sovereign responsibility. Welcome, humankind. New Eridu has been waiting for you. Welcome, Sovereigns, and thank you for spending your Saturday evening in New Eridu. And, of course, a special shout-out to the Archives listeners. Thank you so much for your continued support. The New Eridu channel is closing in on 10,000 listens, and that's a big milestone, guys. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate that. This week's topic is kind of an interesting one to me personally, because my life has been full of pendulum swings of late. It seems like what goes around comes around, and it keeps coming around until you find some way to finally settle it. Now, that's the characteristic of a lesson. When you have something in your life that just keeps coming back and back and back and back, there's something else going on. And this is the way the universe is trying to show you that something else is going on. Because if you don't get the lesson the first time, guess what? You get to repeat it. So I think our whole world right now is going through something of that lesson cycle right now. excuse me. In my personal experience, the pendulum swing can be destructive or it can be healing. And which one it is really depends on where you are in your own mental space, where your heart is, where you're putting your attention. All of these things determine whether or not the pendulum has a blade on it or whether it has a kiss on it. Because really and truly, the same blade that can wound can also heal in this case. I usually begin this show with a recap of the news, and it feels really bad to me to do that this week, considering one of the decisions that I made this week. And that decision was to cease putting my energy on the negatives and trying to solve the problems. We're past that now. I've made that decision that we have passed, actually, that point. I realize that what I was told is through the end of the year that we still can take some effective action. Well, that's true. But is it effective action towards solving all the problems? Or is it effective action in getting ourselves in the right place and getting our personal ducks in a row? And I think it's probably the latter, because these things are too big to be solved that quickly. And at least using the old approaches. We have new approaches, and those may be more effective, but we're going to be more effective if we do things completely differently. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. But I will go ahead and recap some of the news and strangeness that I usually do at the top of the show, just to kind of illustrate the point here. Of course, I usually start off with solar weather. Well, of course, we had another huge coronal mass ejection the other day. Very spectacular one. It was not Earth-facing, so it's not going to affect us. The sunspot group that caused that coronal mass ejection is rotating towards Earth, so there's a chance it may still spit something at us. We had more earthquake activity, not as much as has been recently. It's actually calmed down quite a bit, with the exception of that one spot in Arkansas that just keeps getting hammered. And I've been noting the trend of that particular spot. It is rising. It's coming. The earthquakes are occurring higher and higher up in the rock strata, which if it was a volcanic area, I would say that it is very possibly a rising volcanic plume there. In other words, likely to have a volcanic eruption. However, I don't think that there's any volcanic activity in that area. And I was thinking, well, what would cause a rising signal like that? And it occurred to me that it could be the beginnings of a big sinkhole. And it's going to be a big sinkhole if that's what it is. So I really hope those folks get some warning to get out of there. And seeing the chat room talking about HAARP, I don't know. It possibly could be HAARP. But I really, because it goes off at the same time with stuff that's coupled to it, if you look at the geographical grid on our planet, it tends to go off in tandem with other earthquakes that are in the Malaysia area. I've been watching it. It does that pretty regularly. The Malaysian stuff goes off and it goes off. So, yeah, I suppose it's possible it could be HAARP still that's transmitting somehow that way, but I don't know. I tend to think that this is more of a natural disaster that's coming. And let's hope it really isn't a disaster. Let's hope that everybody gets plenty of warning and they can move away from it, and that it stays a localized thing.
again, you can't call these things. You just can't. You have to just hope and send positive intentions. Abstract Truth says, a hellhole. Well, first of all, you'd have to believe in hell. I think Washington, D.C. is the closest to that. Anyway, let's see. What else has been going on? Well, in the Gulf of Mexico, the reports of the new baby dolphins are dying. And very sad, they're washing up on the beach. And they're saying that this is a serious concern about the health of the Gulf. Now, they're reporting that Gulf oysters are back. Well, I don't know about you, but I just kind of don't have a taste for Gulf oysters right now. I want to see what happens. I'd like to see some laboratory reports run on these oysters to see if, what kind of chemicals they have in them, because oysters are filter feeders, and that means that anything that's in the water is going to be in the oyster. For example, my husband tells a story of he used to be a waterman up on the Chesapeake Bay, and he used to go fishing for oysters, and that's literally what they call it, fishing for oysters. And he told this story about having pulled oysters out of an area that was near a large cornfield, and geese and ducks would go into that cornfield and eat the corn. And of course, what do geese and ducks do after they have eaten corn? They make do. And of course, that washes into the water. Well, he pulled up these oysters, and they were big, fat, pretty looking things, and cracked one open to take a look at it, and it was just as green as it could be. It was the color of the poop. And he said, I can't even sell these, and just scooted them off the boat again. They went back into the water. So that's an example, though, of whatever is getting washed off of the land, whatever's in the water, et cetera, is going to be in the oyster. So be careful with the seafood, folks, seriously, because they're releasing this stuff to us, and I don't think it's good for us. Let's see, what else? Well, protest exhaustion, of course. There's just been so many, and it's been so drawn out. I think most of us are really, you know, we look at what's on the TV or on CNN or whatever and go, oh, no, not another one. And I've been very happy that most of them have been relatively restrained, much more so than I would have expected from that region. Of course, with the notable exception of Libya and Gaddafi running amok, that situation is just insane. I mean, and he's insane. I mean, you look at him and you can just see it all over him. Yemen is teetering on anarchy. Who knows what's going to happen next? I mean, the entire Northern Africa and Middle East area is just unstable. Israel was after shooting at somebody in Gaza again today. They can't stop. They just can't stop it. So, who knows? Apparently in Wisconsin, the police have joined the union workers in protesting in the Capitol there, which, well, I'm not even going to comment on that again. What else? Let's see. Another thing that's been surfacing in my radar, particularly since it's my topic, are the number of websites and materials and people who have written books that didn't sell very well and so on and so forth that over the last couple of weeks have started to surface that have to do with the Anunnaki. And most of these that are surfacing now were written prior to the beginning of the official contact phase. These were folks that were just I guess, in the UFO community that were speculating on stuff. They had read some Sitchin and decided that they were going to do something similar and more sensationalist, as if you needed to be more sensationalist with Anunnaki. Anunnaki history is a soap opera. And these folks have somehow managed to make it more of a soap opera, which is really kind of amazing. At any rate, it's the worst of the worst, so the fear-mongering is starting to come out. And I swear, I think this has to do with an agenda to put a bad light on impending exopolitical contact that's going to be visible, to get the people as afraid as possible of what's coming. And I'm not going to sugarcoat this. Not all Anunnaki are good guys. Most of them are pretty funky. All right? But thinking of it in this terms, there are a lot of people out there who are kind of funky too. That's really no difference. Okay? There's good Anunnaki, there's bad Anunnaki. There's so-so Anunnaki, and there's whacked out weird people like me. So just bear that in mind, and bear in mind that if you feel the need to denigrate somebody, a particular racial group or a particular exopolitical group or whatever, that says more about you and your motivations than it does about the group that you are maligning. So just think about that when you run across some of this stuff. And anyone who wishes to bring an article or a book or whatever to my attention and get my opinion on it, you are welcome to contact me. And I will do my best to answer you. My time is limited, so I can't, go line by line through it, but I can give you a general feedback on it. I also would like to know all of the stuff that's out there, because I know I'm going to get asked about it. And I honestly just don't have the time necessary to go research it as thoroughly as probably I need to, because I have bills to pay too, so I can't do this full time. So if you bring it to my attention, that helps me a lot. And in return, I'll be happy to give you my opinion on it. Now, that you got to realize that, you know, opinions aren't always accurate. I try to be as accurate as I can, but I may not know everything. As a matter of fact, I guarantee you I won't know everything. And there may be a few things I'm flat wrong on. Not because of anything that's you know, an agenda, but just simply because I misunderstood something, or perhaps I didn't get told the whole story, or who knows. You know, life is like that. Exploration of content is like that. You don't always get all of it at once. So you are definitely invited to bring any of that to my attention, however. Probably one of the places, when you think of the pendulum swing, one of the places where it shows up the most frequently in human history and with the most deadly results is centered around religion. And I had an example of that brought to my attention just recently when on Austin Public Access Television, there were a couple of atheists. They have a regular show on there talking about atheist topics, which I find kind of bizarre because what... Oh, boy. I hope you guys can hear me now. Call dropped on me. Okay, where was I? Atheists. At any rate, these two atheists on a public access show here in Austin have a regular show and had a Christian caller call in, and he was rather ineloquent. And I find that fairly frequently, because they don't know how to defend their faith using the same weapons that atheists do, because they typically don't need to. At any rate, this video of these guys taking this caller on
apparently has gone viral on YouTube, and it's getting passed around a lot among the people that I know, because I know a lot of people who are magicians, and they like to make fun of Christians. And this was, look at this stupid Christian. He's like, I can't buy into that stuff. It's painful to even watch these guys do it. And here's a comment that I had written on one of the videos, because I happened to know the people that were on that particular chat were more reasonable than most. And I'm going to go read you my comment here. In this exchange, I am reminded of the snarky comment, I won't engage in a battle of wits with an unarmed person. That's not a defense of the Christian. Rather, it is a commentary that both sides leave a lot to be desired in their thinking process. Where the atheists want the Christian to prove that God exists with documentation and eyewitness testimony, I would like to see the atheist documentation and eyewitness testimony that God, by whatever label, doesn't exist. Cosmology and emerging science tend to support the idea of intelligent design. The next layer in chaos theory mathematics likely will support that it's all random math. It goes back and forth, so why worry? Pick the side you like best and follow that. It is likely to lead you to the same place in the end. There is no one right way. That would be stupid and limiting if you were God. And if there is no God, it would go against the mathematical principles of requisite diversity. As for atheism being somehow more logical, atheism is a belief system that has evangelists with huge holes in their arguments, like these guys, too. For example, if they don't believe in hell, why are they upset about those who think they are going there? It's not like these people have the power or the intention necessarily to send them there. Sure, it's rude to say something like that, but why answer rudeness with more rudeness? I have had plenty of people tell me that's where I was going. I was labeled the Antichrist and treated horribly by a family member. I lost a job at a critical time in my life because I wouldn't go to my boss's speaking in tongues church. And a couple of people became violent when they asked me my thoughts on a spiritual issue, and I spoke my truth without judgment or without asking anyone else to believe it. On the other hand, I escaped a situation I was tricked into by a left-hand path magician who intended to make me a bloody sacrifice. By what I can only term as a miraculous divine intervention. I don't take any of what people have done to me personally because I'm not the one with the problem. They are, and their religion was not the root of it, rather their mental problems were. In the end, the arguments on both sides are a matter of perspective. Each person is their own judge and to each his or her own. I'm a pantheist by definition because all comes from the same source and all things, therefore, are eternal and holy. I find truth where it is, and I don't care about labels. Peace. That back and forth is driving me bonkers in religion. Christians versus Muslims. Muslims versus Christians. Who hates who more? Who cares? All right? Magicians and occultists versus Christians. Everybody back and forth there. And they do the same things that they accuse the Christians of, and they don't realize they're doing it, and they won't admit that they're doing it. And it's like, I get so sick of this argument. Back and forth with the pendulum. Who's more right? Who's more wrong? How about on both ends of the spectrum there, you're about as far wrong as you could be. And if you can manage to hold the center, guess what? You stop the pendulum. So hold the center and quit messing around with the ends. It's silly. And I realize life being a cycle, but it's a bigger cycle than your little drama. So you can stop your little drama at any time you choose, and it's not going to hurt anything else. On that note, another thing that I was coming across today, this week actually, was I was introduced by a lecture series, I guess that's what you call it, called The Work by a lady of the unusual name of Byron Katie. And you almost want to flip her name around to be Katie Byron, but apparently it is Byron Katie. And there's four fundamental questions that she calls upon you to ask about anything that you believe, any presupposition that you have. Ask these four questions. Number one, is it true? Number two, can you absolutely know that it's true? Number three, how do you react when it happens? What happens when you notice this? And when do you believe that thought? And number four, who would you be if you didn't have that thought? Now, that is an approach that will very much take some of the ambiguity and some of the extremism, both ends of the spectrum, out of these sticky wicket kind of cycles that we get ourselves into. And I'm going to walk back through our little news business, and I'm going to ask some questions. I'm also going to ask my own questions about it, which were having to do with perspective, intention, staying in the now moment, and finding new strategies. Okay, solar weather. We know the sun is a variable star. We know that the sun is currently undergoing one of its cyclic, as in pendulum, swings, and its mood swing right now happens to be stormier and to be more likely to be spitting out coronal mass ejections and interfering with our terrestrial satellites and so on and so forth. So we know that that's a natural part of its being. The sun is going to do that. And we haven't really been watching it long enough to say that this is even all that extreme. All we can assess is we can estimate how much this planet's electronics can take before they fritz out. And we already had an incident back in the telegraph days where that could have happened. So, yes, we know it is true that the sun is acting up, and we know as absolutely as we can, that it has the potential to be very disruptive to our modern civilization. Does that really mean that we need to fearmonger over it? Well, I don't know. I think there are steps that we can take in the interim that there's backups available. Now, how do you react when it happens? How do you react when you hear this news? Do you feel fear? What do you believe when you think about it? Do you think, civilization's going to collapse? I'm not going to be able to go to the ATM and get money to buy things. I'm not going to be able to get gas at the gas pump. I'm not going to be able to get to the store. Do you think all those things? Well, those are kind of reasonable thoughts to have about those things. And those thoughts bring to your attention places that you're unprepared. And you need to be thinking about strategies or how to be more prepared if something like this were to happen. So this is very reasonable. So far, this one's pretty reasonable. But not that overt fear. Because who would you be without that thought? You would continue to go on about your business. And maybe you'd be blindsided by it. Maybe if it does happen, then you might be caught short. But if it doesn't happen, is it going to affect you at all? No. It's not going to affect you one little bit. So the truth is somewhere in between those two extremes, that you're blindsided by it and you're left without the ability to get food, versus you're not affected at all. It is not likely to be on either one of the ends of that spectrum. it is statistically more likely to be towards the safer side. But let's just assume it's in the balance point. Let's say that at that balance point, you can expect to have a few days of disruption. But let's just assume that you can get through that. You stock your pantry, you make your plans about how to deal with things, and you just move on. That's how to deal with it. Let's see. The next one that we've talked about earlier, sorry, my phone decided to start ringing right in the middle of my show. The next one we had talked about was earthquakes. Well, unless you live in one of those areas, you've probably not got a lot of problems that you're going to have to face. So do we know that it's true? Yes, we know that it's true that there are earthquakes that can happen. And depending, you also have a good idea of whether you live in a bad spot for earthquakes. Do you feel particularly fearful about it? How do you react when you think about earthquakes? Do you think about people you know that live there, people just in general as an empathic sense? Again, who would you be without that thought? Again, you're in a situation where it's two ends of the spectrum. Either you're affected or you're not affected. Odds are it's going to be somewhere in the middle. And depending on where you are geographically, it's going to determine which side of that middle point you're likely to be. Prepare. Have knowledge. Again, you can pull it to the center and stop the cycle of fear. Don't let them use the cycle of fear against you on sun or on the earth or on the weather or any of these things that they're throwing at us right now. All these things, I mean, they're even to the point where they're fear-mongering about asteroids. And we know with very good certainty that we're going to get hit by an asteroid again. That happens. Unless we get some space defenses up there capable of dealing with asteroids and knocking them out of the trajectory so they don't hit the planet, and they're reliable defense systems, then we're going to get hit. We know that's going to happen. Can we live our lives, because it's such a low probability for each day that this is going to happen, can we live our lives in fear about it? No. Should we take proactive actions to ensure that the cataclysm doesn't occur? Yeah, sure we should. We should not be spending our money on fighting. We should be spending our money on ensuring our planet's survival. Actually, the planet will survive. We won't. ensuring our species survival. These things are examples of very low level on the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, low level things, because they have to do with survival and well-being. Now, you can move up a little bit higher in that hierarchy of needs when you look at a few other things. For example, these protests. Do we know that what they're protesting about is true? To some degree we do. We have an inkling that they probably are not living in the best situations in terms of what their leadership is like, what their governance is like. There's lots of corruption. There's lots of nasty stuff going on over there. But are we sure that all the voices that we're hearing on the opposition are unsullied and also are not representing special interests and different agendas that maybe are at least as corrupt or even perhaps more corrupt? No, we don't know that. We can't know that. We're not there. We don't know these folks. And if we did know these folks, they'd still probably lie to your face if they were corrupt. So, no, you can't quite know that. So that's why sometimes when people go, oh, isn't it great that there's these, you know, things are happening over there and they're finally going to overthrow these corrupt dictators and stuff. It's like the devil you know. I know this fellow's a snake in the grass. What's going to come in behind him? Is it going to be a military regime that's even worse? Is it going to be somebody who's even crazier? Is it going to be somebody who hates America even worse? And I'm not saying that America's not to blame for some of this. Of course it is. But somewhere in that cycle, the cycle of hatred needs to stop. The question is this change going to support that? We over here in America had a big thing for a big cycle of supposed change with our last election cycle, and guess what? It was right back to the same old stuff. And no change, just different faces with the same garbage going on. So I'm just afraid that that's what's going to happen over there. And you notice my terminology. I am afraid. That's what they want. They want us to be afraid. They want us to keep our eye on what's going on over there with the thought of fear in our minds. So that's where you start moving up a little bit in the Maslow's hierarchy, because now this has to do more with instead of just being safety, certainly there's safety aspects to it because of things like the oil production being disrupted and the threat of terrorism and rogue states. But there also is the question of self-actualization in there, because a lot of us want to see that area improve in terms of human rights, particularly women's rights. Are the changes that are coming over there going to support human rights and women's rights, or are they going to continue to undermine it? How do you feel when you think about what's going on over there? When you believe that the change is better? Or how do you feel when you believe that the change is worse? Think about that. And that, use those thoughts to dig out what you really know and don't know, and what you hope for and what you fear in that area. And then finally, think about what would the world have to be like for you never to have that thought? Because if you can compare that world that you can imagine where that thought would never even come up to the world that's evoking all of these thoughts, you can see where the mismatches are. And you can see clearly what needs to change to bring your vision of a better future into fruition. This is a thinking tool that you can apply to anything, really and truly. So just think about that tool as you go through some of the things that we get thrown at us in terms of spin. Use that thinking tool all the time. Is it true? Can you know absolutely that it's true? How do you react? And what happens when you believe that information or that thinking? And who would you be? And what would your world be like if that thought didn't exist? And then as you get to that last stage and you can imagine that, you can turn it around. Because then you know what the differences are. You have mapped that out. And you have thought all the way through it. That is thinking a complete thought, folks. And that's something they don't teach in school. They do not teach you how to think a complete thought. So be thinking on that one. Now, I will tell you, this week in particular has been kind of a showstopper for me in a lot of ways, because I realized that I was putting my energy in the wrong place. I had been planning all of these what-if scenarios. You know, what if everything continues on, we continue with corporate America, we continue with the status quo of, you know, terrestrial politics the way it is, die yuppie scum, et cetera, okay? I say that jokingly, but you know what I mean. We don't get we still keep building the Mac mansions, and we still keep trashing the environment, and we still keep, you know, playing games with the third world, and China's playing games with us, and the Federal Reserve eats our money and whatever. What if that just continues for the rest of my life? One scenario of planning goes that way. All of the defensive strategies, I have to have the job, I have to have the money, I have to have, you know, all the house and everything lined up, and have to plan for my husband getting old and me getting to where I can't work and all the worries that come with that. Not pretty, let me tell you. Then there was another one. What if there's like complete upheaval and all of the jobs go overseas and the money's no good and we end up in a civil war and all these doom and gloom things, and how do I have to plan for that, and the strategies of, you know, having self-sufficiency stuff in place and ways of defending myself in place and so on and so forth and all of that. And that's not pretty either. Okay? Now, neither one of those is a pleasant scenario. Both of them require quite a lot of resources, quite a lot of energy and money spent to prepare for. And doesn't put me one step down the path to what I really want. Because I had to think about that really hard, because that's a question that I don't think anybody ever asked me until I was about 35 years old. Maybe a little older than that, I'm not sure. It was right around the time that I had had an almost fatal illness. And I had managed to turn that around. And I can't remember if that was asked while I was on the way down or on the way up. It was right in that area. So that would be somewhere between age 35 and age 38. And my then husband, different husband, asked me, what did I want? And I kind of stood there with my mouth open like an idiot, and I'm going, nobody's ever asked me that before. And I really hadn't. I had always just done what I had to do. I had never done what I wanted to do. It never even occurred to me that I could do what I wanted to do. And the answer that came into my mind was not the one that came out of my mouth. The answer that came into my mind was, I want to change the world. I think the one that came out of my mouth had something more to do with what I wanted to do with the house. But it was interesting that no one had even asked me that question. I hadn't even asked myself that question until I was that old. And things changed, and I ended up on my own again. And I didn't think too much more about what did I want. I thought about what did I have to do to get from where I was to where I need, where I thought I needed to be to keep going. And when I went through this stuff this week where I was looking at all of the way I was dividing my energy, I realized that the reason I was dividing my energy like this was because I forgot to ask myself what I want. I should be putting my energy towards what I want, not towards all these disaster scenarios. I should be putting my energy, taking my energy out of those things and putting them into, guess what, the thing that I want. So I retract what I do. At this point, I'm putting everything that doesn't directly apply to my getting what I want on baseline maintenance, that means I'm not putting another ounce of energy or money into it beyond what my commitments require me to do. So that frees up a whole lot of energy and thinking and a little bit of money to do what I want to do. And I'm asking people for things I have never asked for before. I'm asking people for money. I'm asking people to work for me for free. I'm asking a whole bunch of favors. And I'm just always, I'll do it myself. Thank you very much, person. And I can't do that now because this is bigger than I can do, and I need help doing it. And I am asking for those things. I am drawing that energy from the future back into the now and asking people to invest. So we'll see how that comes out. I think that's something we all need to do, because if we sit here and we look at these disasters and we chew on them, that we're actually hurting ourselves because we're throwing away our energy in a negative direction, and we're reinforcing the likelihood that that is exactly what the universe is going to give us. Stop the pendulum. Because what you're thinking is doing is somehow it is swinging back and forth between two extremes. The extremes of the pie in the sky future, everyone ascends, everybody sings kumbaya, to all hell breaks loose and we're all going to die in a nuclear holocaust or get enslaved by aliens or the New World Order or whatever, okay? It's not going to be on either of those extremes, more than likely. It's going to be somewhere in the middle. You're going to settle out somewhere in the middle. Which direction you go is being biased at this very second by your effective actions that you are taking. In terms of where are you putting your attention and where are you putting your energy and where are you putting your money? Change that around and put those things in the direction that you seek. You have to live in the real world. You have to buy your groceries. You have to make your house payment, whatever, just to stay even. But don't do a single thing beyond that. If none of us does our home improvements or buys our plasma screen TV or whatever for the next several years, that's not going to hurt it anything. It really isn't. Some people, it's going to redefine the way we do our work, the way we do our lives, etc. Because we're going to find new ways, more useful ways of spending our energy and our labor and our money and our being. It's going to force us to withdraw your energy from anything that does not directly support the reality that you want to live in. The change will be enormous if you do that. If enough of us do that, it will change the world. And it will buy us in a more useful direction. The first thing that you have to realize as you get prepared to take these steps is you need to examine the things that you think you have to do. And find out whether or not you really have to, or whether that's really somebody else's expectation that's on you. and learn to say to yourself, you don't have to. Well, Skype dropped me again. I hope you can hear me. It looks like my Skype completely died. Okay. That song I was trying to tell you guys is actually a new work from a group called Metropolis America. I got that through Ariel Publicity, and it is actually a new. Song entirely. So if you have a chance, check them out. Kind of interrupted my train of thought entirely there. one of the lines in that song I find very interesting is stop the starting over. And that is so true about humankind. We're really great at starting things. At least I know I am, and I look around me and I see evidence of it also elsewhere. It's always great to build a building. It's always great to start a new project. It's always great to begin something. But then there comes a point at which the maintenance drudgery gets to be too much, and we sort of walk away from it, and we don't finish what we start. And that's the thing that I keep telling people. You got to take the Anunnaki approach to doing things. The do, D-U, which actually is their word for doing, but their implication of the word do means to do to completion. So if we did things all the way to completion, that too would be a large paradigm changer because, for example, one of the things we look at is the true cost of a product. The cost that you pay in the store is not the true cost of it. The true cost of it is when you add up all of the impacts of all of the things that happened to get that product to the store, which may have been maybe deferred costs in terms of, like, say, environmental damage or political damage. For example, if you're doing business with a country that maybe you oughtn't because of the way they behave, there's the cost of the thing actually existing and being maintained throughout its lifespan, and there's the cost of the disposal of the product. And we don't understand that what we've been doing is we have been accumulating this massive debt. And some of it, the reason we're starting to see economy problems is because some of that debt is starting to impact us, this invisible cost of stuff that is not included in the sticker. You know, we're starting to see some of that turn up in terms of environmental impact and in terms of jobs being shipped to other locations and those locations learning to dislike us or wanting to own us or having, you know, disadvantageous trade arrangements with us and such. All those things are starting to add up. And if people had been thinking in terms of doing their job, they would have realized that and they would have taken that into account as they built their process loops for managing their businesses. So it's just short-sightedness that a lot of this has happened. So just an example of a loop, that cycle coming back to bite us, that pendulum swinging back. There it is. Now, I'd like to change the focus from an analysis of what has happened that maybe isn't as wonderful as it could have been, to something that potentially might be a little more hopeful. And now I read this to you as a person who knows very little more than what has been reported on the news. But this fella surfaced in my reality just a couple of weeks ago. I'd never heard of him before. But he's getting a lot of press. So that means there's some reason he's getting press. And that may be because he is someone that is being put forward for a hidden reason. Or it may simply be that he is representing a zeitgeist, a force of change that is going on in the Middle East. So I'm going to read this article to you verbatim. This was written by Lauren E. Bone, who is writing it for CNN. As Egyptians return to Tahrir Square to push for the realization of more political demands, one of the world's most influential Muslim television preachers delivered his first address in Egypt since President Hosni Mubarak left office. "I don't have a stronger message than this. Kill yourself working for Egypt," Amir Khaled told a crowd of thousands. Khaled traveled to Soag, a poor governorate in Upper Egypt, for the first time to deliver lectures. He announced the launch of a microfinance project and literacy and political awareness campaigns. Hagar Ashraf, 15, said it was the best day of her life. "It's the first time to see him. I always saw him on television talking about hope," she said. "That's why I love him. Just hope, nothing more." Heralded by many in the West as a voice of Islamic moderation, Khaled urged youth to practice peaceful coexistence and be tolerant of different cultures and ideas. "The world is opening up for all of us," he said. It certainly is for Khaled, who was one of Time magazine's 100 most influential people in 2007. He has been banned from speaking in his native Egypt for the past 8 years. Khaled's trademark brand of faith-based development and massive popularity among the nation's young and restless was a thorn in the side of Mubarak's regime. He was forced to leave Egypt several times as critics worried he was inspiring youth not only to change their lives, but also the regime. He returned to Cairo on January 28th to show his support for the revolution that wound up sweeping Mubarak from power. "Blood has started to run in Egyptians' veins," he said. "I'm using all this energy and opportunity to, inshallah, inspire youth to dedicate their lives to improving Egypt." Despite efforts made by Mubarak's regime, the sharp-suited 43-year-old has turned into a celebrity over the years. Khaled was greeted with crowds, gifts, and requests for autographs on his early morning flight and on Sohag's dusty street side street. Youth jumped on Khaled's car as he left his lecture in the town square. They all wanted a piece of the man they say has inspired them not only to be better Muslims, but better people. Earlier this month, the Washington Post reported that Facebook users from Egypt created 32,000 groups and 14,000 pages during the revolution. The page with the most fans from Egypt was Khaled's. With almost unparalleled popularity among youth in Egypt's newly democratic space, many have questioned whether Khaled will run for a political position in the country's future government. "Why not? All the options now are open," he said, adding that he'd only do so if it would improve the Renaissance rather than simply ride the wave of the revolution. Abodoma Fatih Mohammed, a 21-year-old medical student, joined Khaled's Life Makers branch in Sohat a few years ago and said Khaled's foray into politics would naturally extend the amount of people he's changed, like me, adding, "You need government and not just NGOs for development." Khaled shuffled through SOAG meeting with community leaders, including priests and SOAG's governor. According to Khaled's team, some signs showed businesses might return to usual earlier this week as security forces and local government worried about continued worker strikes and demonstrations in the poor governorate, told Khaled and his team they couldn't come to Sohag. "We simply went ahead anyway," said Gamal Al-Atribi, head of Life Makers in Egypt. "It's still the mind of the old government, but hopefully the power of the revolution will change this." Ayman, 40, hopes so. "We have a large amount of ignorance in Sohag. It's a village system, and we suffer a lot," he said, making Asab a sugarcane juice in his store across the square where Khaled delivered a lecture after Friday's prayer. We need people like him to come here. A few streets down, Salafis gathered at Al-Haq Mosque to listen to a lecture by another formerly censored figure, the prominent Salafi Sheikh Yasser Borhami from Alexandria. A critic of the former government, Borhami's website, SalafVoice.com, has been shut down by Mubarak's regime in the past. Look, they have different points of view, different than Khaled's, maybe, said life maker Hassan Mari. But after all, we're all Muslims. It's all a matter of applications. We are all brothers. Though an accountant turned preacher, youth like Heba El Said, 23, said Khaled has been an inspirational spiritual leader. Amr Khalid advises us and speaks to our hearts. He doesn't give us orders on what I should or shouldn't do, she said. I love Amr Khalid for his way to discuss, his way to develop, his way to change. Now, here is an example in this fella of someone who is coming with a moderate message and is gathering followers. Now, I'm not going to pass judgment one way or the other on this guy or whether or not he's legitimate or whether he is what he says he is. I don't know. I cannot pass judgment on that. But I can observe the power that this fellow has massed as far as being able to bring a moderate voice into focus. What we need here is the same thing, but for the moderate voices and the brotherhood, sisterhood, families of light workers, of people who wish to see humankind move into a better way of living, a better relation with one another and with our planet and with those that may be visiting us. And they will be visiting us soon. Every pointer tells me that. Everyone. We're on the threshold. We need to have our ducks in a row before that happens. We need to have ourselves together. And it's not the time for ego, and my project is better than your project, and I'm going to be making profit off of this, so I can't cooperate with you because we're too close to each other. Enough. That carried this civilization through some pretty nasty times and through slavery, really and truly it did. It ensured that we remained in slavery. Is that really what we want to do in the future? How about if we just shared? How about if we just didn't go out, set out to save the world? Because remember I said that was the thing that I said I wanted to do. I wanted to change the world. Well, I want to change the world. I don't want to save it. The world is already what it is. And I don't even like the word save because that carries connotations. But we need to change the way we're doing things and the way we're thinking. And we need to examine our thoughts every single time we consider what we're doing in our business and in our personal lives. Is it true? Can you absolutely know that it's true? How do you react? And what happens when you believe that? And who would you be like? And what would your world be like if that thought, if that idea, if that circumstance didn't exist? Map out the change. Work on the change. That's how we're going to peel this onion, folks. That's how we're going to break down this huge job of changing things. It's too big. you take a look at it, you just go, because you can't figure out how you're going to even start. You know, your eyes get all big and you just gasp if you stop to think of it in the whole cloth change that needs to happen. By chunking it down to that little level of one unit of action in my personal life, how do I bring that into alignment with the with what it should be in the world as I imagine that I want to live in it? You know, I pick my future that I want. How do I align what I'm doing right here, right now, with what I'm doing in the future? How do I make what I'm doing now point myself in the right direction? How do I manifest this future being in this future world that I want to live in right now in the world that I'm in at the moment? If each one of us can take one little piece of our life every day and bring it into alignment, by the end of this year of effective action, we will have realigned ourselves. We will have realigned ourselves personally, each one of us. And we will have started planting the seeds, because other people are going to see you doing this and they're going to wonder what's happening. And you can go out and you can tell them what you're doing. And then you can teach them how to do it for themselves. And it can go viral. And we can have realignment happening in this country, on this planet, and everywhere else that our thoughts and our energies and our intentions can touch. And that is a very, very large area. You think in terms of a solar system, I think in terms of a universe. This could go viral and it will change everything. So change the big picture by incrementally changing the small picture. Stick to where your personal power is and your now moment. Stick to what you perceive. Stick to what you intend in this moment and manifest that change. Now, I see Gary had written in here to love the world awake. Yes, that's part of it. But love yourself awake and love your family awake. Even if it doesn't seem like they're waking up, that's one of the things that's going to be happening over this next years. We're going to be noticing who's waking up and who isn't, or doesn't seem to be. I've personally spoken to several people who have been very upset because they've woken up and their family hasn't, or their significant other hasn't, and it's causing conflict with them because the difference in perspective is such that there's a mismatch. And all of a sudden, the shared priorities that the couple may have had, such as a professional achievement or financial achievement, has suddenly changed for one of the members of the partnership. And the other one is left standing there going, what happened? Not being able to see the forces that created that change in the person who did wake up. Understand that everyone will wake up. They will not all wake up at the same time. And that we will have times where we are mismatched with those we care about. And that we realize in some cases, we may even realize that who we are with is, it may have been okay for the old paradigm, but it's not okay for the new one. So sometimes these things are going to change. And remember, as you go through these, always to love and honor yourself and that other person, both. If you find that you have to change your relationship with someone, remember always to honor them and to honor yourself, both. do the right thing, do the responsible thing, and don't feel badly about it, because none of us knew how all-encompassing this change was going to be. Don't let anybody make you feel guilty. Okay? None of us were prepared for this. So don't buy the guilt trip. Just move through it and do what you need to do. So just a little personal perspective there. Now, as we go through these times, we're going to be seeing a lot of cycles that are going to be swinging back and forth with that pendulum swing going. We're going to be seeing a lot of black and white thinking. We're going to be seeing a lot of extremism. A lot of times, if you pay attention to how it's coming out, it's literally being cartooned for us. It's almost like someone's drawing us a cartoon picture of what extremism and black and white thinking and polarity looks like, and how silly some of the people who are involved in it appear to be. Just watch the news. You'll find your own examples of that. The thing is, if you read sociological studies, when the pendulum swings, there's always a lot of risk that's associated with it. And that risk primarily comes from overreaction. I talked last week about de-individuation and the danger of falling into the herd mentality and what the herd, once stirred up, can do. The herd can do things that an individual person would never dream of, because the responsibility for that action is absolved for each individual. When a pendulum swing occurs, you'll see camps developing on either side of this pendulum swing, the polar opposites of it. And those crowds of people will tend to form herds, and they will tend to act in ways that they would not act as individuals. The key, when you notice when this is starting to happen, the key is to keep yourself and as many as you can communicate with out of the herd. Keep their focus in the now moment and on their own individual ethics, beliefs, core concepts, sovereign intentions. That way, by keeping yourself and as many others as you can from falling into the herd mentality, you can position yourself to be the shepherds who care for the herd and keep them from hurting themselves. Because there's going to be moments where that having a few voices speak up with the right words at the right time, as individuals in fully empowered, self-empowered, sovereign individuals, is going to change the direction of how things are going to happen. So it's very important that as you see these things occur, you begin to step into that role of the sovereign, the self-determining individual who does not join into the collective, who maintains the individual perspective, and who does it from a very loving position of one who cares for one's fellow humankind. You are your brother's keeper in this case. If they cannot keep themselves, they need someone who can. And not everyone's going to be awake enough and aware enough and understand enough about the dynamic of the situation to deal with it themselves, and they will need your help. Now, do you think this is the first time that we have been in a situation like this as a species? No. If you look back over history, you'll see time and time again, there have been problems that are just like this that keep coming up. They may have different coats of paint on them. They may have different faces and different spins, but they're essentially always the same problems. It's always somebody's oppressing somebody else, somebody's stealing from somebody else. It's all power, money, stuff. The reason those problems keep coming back is because we didn't solve them the first time. We may have solved the particular one little instance, or maybe it just simply everybody got old and died. But we didn't learn the lesson as a species and put into place civilized means of dealing with the problem so that it doesn't occur, or that it can be quickly and efficiently and kindly dealt with when it does occur. And that's why those problems keep coming up, is because we need to learn those lessons and put those controls into place. And they have to be things that are a consensus. And it can't be, my religion says X, therefore, you know, all of you guys, these rules apply to me, but they don't apply to you, or those rules apply to you, but they don't apply to me, or whatever. We have to realize that we are bigger than any of these little subdivisions. We are much, much bigger as individuals and as collectives. I have a friend who uses a term that I just dearly love when she describes someone who has a limited perspective on religion or their relationship with sacred. She says, your God is too small. And let me tell you, each and every one of you guys that's listening right now, and I know some of y'all are going to feel like, oh, that doesn't apply to me. Your God's too small, folks. Because you're thinking on terms of personal stuff that's going on. You're thinking in terms of, well, God's going to carry me through this. Going to carry my nation through this. We're more favored with God than they are, you know. Or those of you who believe that you are an identity condition with God, that's even more limiting, because whatever limitations you have placed on yourself, you're also placing on your God. Let me tell you, this is so much bigger. God is you. God is me. God is people halfway across the world that have never heard of you or me. God is people that have lived in the past and people that will live in the future. Time doesn't mean anything to God. God is simultaneous. Source is simultaneous. Source does not care where you were, who you were, when you were, what you were. You're still a part. You're still holy. There's nobody more holy than anybody else. There's nobody more special than anybody else. And people go, oh, my ego. My ego says I'm more special. I look at this person over here, I'm certainly more special than that person over there. Mm-mm. You're special in different ways. And you just happen to like the way that you're special more than you like the way that that one's special. It's perspective. Perspective. Remember what I was saying. Change your perspective. Find the perspective that will allow you to see wholeness as opposed to division. Find the perspective that lets everyone win. Find the perspective that heals. It's there. It may be tricky to find because you have to get all of the garbage you think you know out of the way to find it. But you can. There will be a perspective there that will marry all of the opposites And you'll realize that those opposites are just a continuum of possibilities. There's no absolute. Where you are on that continuum, you have determined by your thoughts, by your actions, by your intentions, and by your perspective on how you choose to see things. That's the sovereign way of doing it, to realize that you picked your own place. If you want to change it, you can. Your intentions. Use your intentions to get you from where you are to where you want to be. Once you have the perspective necessary to understand the continuum that you are on, you use your intention to plot the course from where you are to where you intend to be. You put your energy into that intention and not into any intention that would go away from that. You focus all of yourself on achieving the thing that you need for yourself. Now, understand that when I say achieve for yourself, that you are a part of that continuum. Therefore, if you damage any part of that continuum with your actions, you will be responsible for that, and you will be drawn to it to fix your own mess. So doing anything that's outside of a healing action will put you in a position where you are required to fix the mess you made. So it'll seem like you didn't get your intention. No, you got your intention. You just didn't fully define your intention correctly. So you have to fix your mess and start over. Staying in the now moment. If you stay in the now moment, you are more likely to see accurately where you are. Take, for example, all of those fearful things that we worry about. We're worried about the sun. We're worried about earthquakes and earth changes and the weather and terrorists and whether or not we're going to have enough money, whether when we get old enough that we need to retire. Whether there's, you know, what's going to happen with aliens? Are they ever going to tell us the truth about that? If they show up, are they going to eat us? So on and so forth. Where are you right now? Are aliens eating your brain? Is the government coming to take away something that belongs to you that you'd like to keep? Is the sun bumping particles on your head right this moment that you don't want? Where are you in the now moment? Are any of these fears manifesting right now in this now moment? Probably not. And that's probably true of most of you here now moments. So you can't live your life in fear. It's okay to look ahead and plan your course, because you need to do that for your intention. And it's okay to look back to see where you came from, but don't dwell back there because it's done. You really need to do what you're doing when you're driving your car. When you're driving your life, you need to have your eyes forward. You have to be paying attention to what is immediately around you. Yes, look down the road to see what may be ahead. But it's more important to pay attention to the thing you're likely to hit next or have hit you next. So stay in that now moment and mind your own being. If everyone does that, all of the problems go away. if everyone is in the now moment doing what they're supposed to be doing in the now moment, it solves most of the things that we worry about. One step in front of the other. If you take the right step, and then you take another right step, and then you take another right step, eventually you will get to the right location. Now, there's another little trick I'd like to teach you, and this is one that I learned years ago. Have you ever heard the phrase, "It was in the last place I looked," when you've lost something and it was very difficult to find? And it's true. Wherever you lost something and you finally find it, it's always in the last place you look. It's true. You know why it's in the last place you look? Because you found it and you stopped looking. There's an extension to that, and I call it the Melchizedek principle. And there's a long history as to why it's called that. But the Melchizedek principle basically says, when you have done all of the things that you can think of to do, and you have not solved the problem, start doing the things you can't do. What can't you do in any given situation? I can't lose my house. I can't quit my job. What if that's exactly what you need to do instead? I've been there, I don't know how many times, where I have just beat myself bloody on something. I have tried every possible thing that I could think of to solve the problem, and nothing solved it. Most people, when they get into one of those cycles, they'll just keep repeating the things that didn't work, expecting something to magically happen, rather than realizing that they have really run up against something where they have got to change the way they're thinking about it and the way they're approaching it, and that the logical things that most people would follow aren't going to work on that one. When I get into one of those, when I notice I'm starting to repeat stuff that I have done before that didn't work, I step back and I look at the things that I can't do. And I pick, assuming there's more than one, sometimes there's only one thing I can't do. And I pick the thing that I can't do, and I do it. You know what? It's never worked against me. I have always come through it. Every single time, it has always been the right thing to do, or at least not the wrong thing to do. Sometimes there's no good end to a situation. An example that I had was I had worked very hard to get a job that was well up in the hierarchy of management in corporate America, and it seemed like the perfect job. Drew on all of my skills. I was getting to learn new things and do new things and take on more responsibilities. And it looked like the perfect thing. And all of a sudden, I was in there, and the company had just reorganized when I joined it. They had just laid off a whole bunch of people and had gone through this big reorg, and everybody's kind of spinning off center from that. And after about 3 months, it started to kind of come back together again. And it came back together again in a toxic configuration to where nothing that you did could ever possibly be the right thing. And I tried all of the different strategies that I had in my change management toolkit to get that to turn around. And all that managed to do was generate some enemies, everybody was already at everybody else's throat because they were figuring there was going to be more layoffs, and they figured, you know, they were jockeying for position to see who they could put into a bad position so that person would be more likely to be cut than they would be. And it was very, very backstabbing and nasty. And I went through all of these positive steps that I could think of to decide, you know, how am I going to change the situation? And I got to the end of it, and nothing was working. And what was the one thing that I couldn't do? I couldn't quit that job, because then I would be running away and I'd be admitting defeat and I was never going to get another job like that again. And, you know, that was blowing my opportunity that I'd worked my entire life for and. And I looked at all the things I had done and all the things, you know, that hadn't worked and why they hadn't worked. And I realized the thing that I couldn't do was stay in that situation. I really couldn't. So I quit the job. I took I can't quit this job, and I acted on it. I quit the job. And my life changed entirely. And it's been difficult, but it has been fulfilling. I've managed to go more than a year now working entirely for myself. I've managed to keep my bills paid, just barely. I've had to make realignments, but I've been able to do it. And opportunities are coming. And it was the right step to take. If I had stayed in there, one of two things would have happened. My health would have crashed again, because it was getting ready to. I was working 100-hour weeks. Or I would have gotten cut. I would have gotten fired. One of those two things would have happened. And I guarantee you I would not have bounced as well had I not controlled my own trajectory. You will have situations in your life where there is no really good answer. And you have to pick from the answers that are undesirable as the thing that you can't do. Always pick the one that leads you to sovereignty. Always choose the one that leads you to a position where you are empowered over yourself, over your life, over your future. If you do that, you will land on your feet. Now, as you go forward, creating the reality that you really want, you have to understand something. It doesn't begin with solving all the problems. You think, wait a minute, I got to solve these problems or we're just going to drag them with us into the future. No, not necessarily. Problems will obsolesce. The problems will go away if you stop feeding them. It's like on a chat board, and you get a troll on there, and the troll is causing trouble. If you don't feed the troll will go away and go somewhere else where he does get fed. Okay? It's like that. It really is. Don't put your effort and your intentions and your focus and your time and your resources and your heart into dealing with negatives. Don't go digging down into that cesspool. One of the reasons I think that we got into the situation of overregulation that we have in the United States is the attempt to oversolve problems. We have choked ourselves on safety, on welfare on all of these problems, that we wanted to make sure, you know, nobody got hurt, that nobody fell through the safety net. And what we did instead was we created a monster that ensured that things didn't work well, stifled innovation, and created a permanent underclass of dependence and the societal ills that come along with that. And then we had to have more solutions. It's like when you have a doctor that puts a patient onto a drug, and they put them on the wrong drug for that patient. The patient doesn't tolerate the drug very well. So the doctor then puts the patient on a drug to take care of the side effects of the first drug. Well, guess what? That second drug will have side effects. So the doctor puts the patient on a third. And that can snowball. At one point in time, my mother was on 27 different medications. And at least two-thirds of those medications were medications to deal with the side effects of other medications. I spent an entire summer getting her off of her meds. Got her down to 6. Eventually got her down to 3. 27 medications for one patient. She was dying. And we have done that to ourselves, to our society, by overregulation, by trying to solve too many problems. Let go. Let go of the problem. You have a problem, let go of it. Go put your money, your life, your effort, your thoughts, your heart, your hopes onto the things that are fulfilling to you. Put your money and your energy and your life into life, into something that means something to you. Starve that problem. Just starve it and it'll go away. Now, I'm not talking about don't pay your bills. I'm not talking about, you know, being irresponsible about things. But only do the minimum that you have to on those things. And remember the lesson of never to get into that situation again. Remove it from your pile of worries. Stop feeding it. Creating the reality we really want begins with, guess what? Creating the reality you really want. That's where your energy goes to. That's where your thinking goes to. You take your perspective when you're thinking about what you want to create. You take your perspective and you put your focus on that. Don't think about this is in the future. Think about it as being right now. I have the business that I want to start right now. What would I be doing in this now moment if I had this business? I would be calling up customers. I would be marketing myself. I would be, you know, finding a facility. All of these things call you, that keep bringing your future into your now moment. They call you to action, to do the things you need to do to achieve the future that you intend. Because you can intend and you can plot your course every day, all day, and go nowhere if you don't activate that now moment to power yourself forward into the future that you want to create. Think about how in your personal life you could apply that. What could you be doing right now? Yeah, I know you're listening to my show.
And I appreciate that. But what can you be doing right now to create the future that you want? Well, you could be networking with people in the chat room. You could be looking for something on the internet that'll support your outcome that you want. You could be defining yourself better, defining what it is you want better. You could be learning how to refocus your energies. All of those things are possible for you in the now moment. Now, in this show, we didn't talk so much about love. We didn't talk so much about the power of the heart. But I'll tell you this, from my experiences, particularly recently, I have found that if you're in that now moment and you are focused on achieving a positive outcome, you will love it. And you will love everything that's associated with it. And you will not really have a lot of room for negatives. You will not have a lot of room for worries, for fears, because you're going to be so in love. Think about what you're like when you have met the person that you think you're in love with. Do you sit there and think about, all the bad things that could happen? You're not thinking that. You're in love. You're thinking about all the good things that could happen. You start to fall out of love when the bad things start to become more prevalent. That's what leads you to break up. As long as you're in that now moment, and that now moment is I'm in love, and I'm being drawn forward into a reality that I want to create, it all aligns naturally. Now, defects in understanding of the person, you may be aligning, instead of on that person, you may be aligning on your own ideal of who that person is, and not on the reality of who they are. That's where the trouble sneaks in. But that's true of anything, not just relationships. That's also true of any time when you're in your life and you're lining up on something that's a goal that maybe isn't your goal. Maybe it's an expectation that came from someone else. Or maybe it's something that you've picked something that doesn't exist anymore, a reality that doesn't exist, it's obsolete. There's going to be a lot of that. So you have to be very careful as you pick your futures to make sure you're lining up something that's real, something that really exists. You will find it. You will. I was kind of hoping that someone would call in today and share with me some of the things that maybe they have had that have been cyclical in nature, things that have come up that they need to think about how they can change their perspective or set a better intention about, things that they can think about in terms of their truth. See, it's not just an empirical truth. You have to understand, when I talk about truth, it's not just, can I look this up in a book and find a number on it? It's the truth as to whether it resonates with who you are inside. Because I found in several cases that science was wrong. Experts were wrong. And what my heart was telling me, what my gut was telling me inside was right. So just bear that in mind as you go through these things. And how do you know it's true? That's how that question needs to be answered. Not just assuming blindly that you do know that it's true. You have to show yourself that you know it's true. You have to feel that you know it's true. Because if you don't, you're not in alignment. And that next step, which is to set your intention, you're going to be setting your intention in the wrong direction if you're not in alignment. It's like drawing an arrow, shooting a bow and arrow. You have to have the alignment right or it's not going to hit where you want it to. Speaking as someone who can't aim. Anyway, as we close out the show today, I would like to ask you over the next week to dwell upon the four questions and find places that you can apply these questions as you go forward in your life and in planning your new directions. I want you to step through each of the steps that you need to look at as you progress and ask about each supposition that you have about it. Is it true? Can you absolutely know that it's true? How does it make you feel? How do you react when you believe that? What's your gut telling you? What's your heart telling you? Is this really mine? And then think about, what if this didn't happen? What if this wasn't real? What if I wasn't even thinking about this? Where would I be? What would I be like? What would my world be like? If each one of us can do this practice in our lives, our world will change. And I know there's no way I can prove that to you from where I sit right now, because you and I are too close to each other. I'm a little ahead, I think, sometimes, because stuff hits me, I think, a little ahead of other people sometimes. And then I get to interpret to you what happened. Like with my recent thing about I'm just setting all the other stuff aside. And I'm just not going to worry about it. And I'm going to continue to build only the things that I have interest in. Only those things that are going to bring me into the world that I want to live in. We're going to go ahead and close out this show at this point. This is Chante La Nature by Petrou.